Introducing WonderSuite from Bluehost.com, the tool that makes WordPress wonderful for everyone. Website creation is hard, but now with Bluehost, you can answer a few simple questions about your business and goals, and the WonderSuite tools will automatically lay out your WordPress website or store in minutes. Seriously. From there, you can customize your design, pick your brand colors, and add blocks. No custom theme or coding required. You'll get content suggestions that you can keep or revise. And with Yoast SEO built in, we automatically help you get found in search engines. From step-by-step guidance to suggested plugins to an AI-powered help bot, our built-in tools make WordPress wonderful for everyone. Whether you're a beginner or a pro, you can join over 2 million Bluehost users. Go to bluehost.com/wondersuite. That's bluehost.com/wondersuite.
To jest podcast System Trader, odcinek 62. A dziś zapraszam do wywiadu z Gary Antonasim, z którym porozmawiam sobie na temat kontrariańskiego podejścia do inwestowania. Zaczynamy!
Interesujesz się inwestowaniem na rynkach kapitałowych? Szukasz swojego sposobu na oszczędzanie i pomnażanie pieniędzy? Zastanawiasz się, jak postawić swoje pierwsze kroki na giełdzie? Ponadto fakty, mity, wywiady i ciekawostki ze świata finansów. To i wiele więcej usłyszysz w podcaście System Trader. Zaprasza Jacek Lempart.
Niemal 2 lata temu gościłem w podcaście Gary Antonasiego, który specjalizuje się w inwestowaniu z wykorzystaniem anomalii momentum. I tamten odcinek cieszył się ogromnym zainteresowaniem. Po części dzięki temu, że technicznie taki model inwestowania może być bardzo prosty, a poniekąd dlatego, że jest przy okazji mało absorbujący czasowo. I dla jasności, nie znaczy to, że sam proces inwestowania jest prosty od strony mentalnej. Dziś mam przyjemność gościć Garego ponownie, ale rozmawiamy o podejściu do inwestowania, które stoi na przeciwległym biegunie do anomalii momentum. O ile momentum wykorzystuje długoterminowe trendy, tak dziś Gary opowie nam, jak można wykorzystać krótkoterminowe, antytrendowe anomalie rynkowe w sytuacji, w których rynek jest ekstremalnie wykupiony lub wyprzedany. Uwaga, wywiad ten jest w języku angielskim, ale na stronie systemtrader.pl/062 znajdziesz transkrypt w języku polskim. A jeśli jesteś zainteresowany inwestowaniem, w którym decyzje oparte są na danych, twardych liczbach i weryfikowalnych wynikach, zapraszam też na stronę systemtrader.pl/st, gdzie możesz sprawdzić moje autorskie oprogramowanie System Trader. Przy jego pomocy możesz nie tylko zbudować i przetestować za okres nawet 100 lat strategię inwestycyjną, ale też w prosty sposób możesz ją zastosować na rynku. A teraz zapraszam już do wywiadu z Garym. Hello Gary. Please introduce yourself, especially in the context of your investing experience.
I'm Gary Antonasi. I've been an investment professional since 1974, and I've had a lot of experience in different areas. Right now, I specialize in system-based trading using momentum and some mean reversion principles as well.
All right. Yes. Yeah, so almost 2 years ago, you were on my podcast and we were talking about momentum approach and dual momentum approach. And that episode was very popular among listeners. So as you mentioned, you started investing in the 70s. And how your approach to investing was evolving over the years?
Well, I actually started in college a little before that. And I was basically using other information that I came to respect. And after finishing college, I was hired by Merrill Lynch to be an account representative. And basically, brokers are salespeople more than anything. I would use the Merrill Lynch research and then come off with some strategies of my own that I thought might add some value to it. I have always had kind of a contrary approach to things. So back in the 70s, I focused on gold stocks and stock options, which were generally ignored by people. And after a few years with Merrill Lynch and then Smith Barney, I decided I wanted to really learn more about the market. So I went and got an MBA degree from Harvard, started managing money on the side with a stock option strategy I developed. And that evolved into a hedge fund and working with market makers on all of the option exchange floors. After the option market became more efficient, I gravitated towards commodity futures and operated hedge funds and was a commodity pool operator, working with some of the best traders in the world, like Paul Tudor Jones, Lewis Bacon, John Henry. I did very well and was able to semi-retire after that, and got back to looking for unusual investment approaches to manage my own money. And in 2011 or so, I stumbled across Momentum, which was familiar to me because I tried to read up everything I could on all aspects of investing and was familiar with relative strength. So I read all the academic work on Momentum and saw that there was something there, but that it might be exploited better than was being done in the marketplace. So I did my own research and came up with some research papers. What I realized is that Momentum is a very strong anomaly. Other people have recognized that, of course, too, but that it could be best used when applied in a broader sense than just using it with individual stocks, which is how most people were doing it. So my first research paper actually looked at Momentum applied to investment styles, sectors, individual stocks, and geographic diversified areas of the world. And I found that geographic diversification gave the best results. And I developed some investment strategies along those same lines. Later on, there was some more rigorous research done by Getsky and Samadov, where they looked at Momentum applied to lots of different things, stocks, bonds, commodities, currencies, geographically diversified stock indices, and they came to the same conclusion. Momentum is best used when it's applied in a broader sense, particularly to geographically diversified stock indices.
All right. You mentioned that the market were not that efficient in the 70s when you started. So do you mean that now, today, it's harder to invest on the market?
Well, it depends what market you're talking about. Back in the 70s, the options market was not that efficient, and speculative commodities as well, because you had a lot of hedgers and not that many speculators. Now that's changed. I think commodity market is more efficient now. Options market certainly is. Stocks have always been pretty efficient. I don't think they're perfectly efficient, which is what caused me to decline going to University of Chicago. I was accepted into their PhD program in finance, but I thought I wouldn't fit in very well there because I came to understand that the markets are not perfectly efficient, but they are generally efficient.
Right. But even Gene Fama says now that indeed Momentum exists and it's the premier anomaly. But before we will go into the Momentum and the mean reversion and the topic of today's discussion, I wanted to ask you, is there a difference between investing and trading? Because sometimes we hear about investing and trading, and is there any difference? Is there any border between these two words, or it's the same thing?
Well, investing, you make money, and trading, you lose money. I'm just kidding. Actually, trading is a subset of investing. It happens to be a shorter term, but there really should be no difference.
Right, because typically people want to be investors, but trading sometimes has some negative meaning that, as if traders are mostly losing money, and if you want to make money, you have to be, an investor. And people are here mentioning, for example, Warren Buffett. But okay, I understand that it's more about words. But then how do you invest your money today after all these years of experience? Because you said that initially in the 70s and in the 80s, you did quite well. So basically, if I understand correctly, you are financially free very at very early stage when you were young, pretty young. And after all these years, how do you invest your own money today?
That's an excellent question. I think everyone involved in the financial market should disclose how they invest. I think that's very useful information. So I have about 8% of my net worth in Bitcoin. I didn't plan to have it that way, but I started with 1% and now it's 8%. I have about 10% in my dual momentum fixed income model, which is allocated to the bond markets. Most people don't realize that momentum works very well when applied to fixed income as well as to equity indices. And then I have about 20% in my newest program, which I call broad ETF swing trading, or BEST. And what it does is apply all different types of momentum to the entire ETF market, non-leveraged ETFs. And it trades more frequently. It's a weekly program. And I've got about 20% of my net worth involved in that in a beta test. Right now, I always like to do things in my own account before I introduce something to the public. And then I have over 50% of or the balance of my net worth invested in an enhanced version of Global Equities Momentum model that I wrote about in my book. And that basically shifts between U.S., non-U.S. Equities and bonds, depending on relative and absolute momentum.
Right. And regarding the Bitcoin, let me go back to that. Did you just buy it? I mean, you just hold it, or do you manage it actively?
In 2017, I managed it actively. And then I decided I would just hold some. So I'm basically a hodler now with Bitcoin. The one thing I forgot to mention is I do have a mean reversion type, very short-term program, which I think we're going to talk about today. And I use that as an overlay in my EGM trading account. So in other words, sometimes it will have periods where it doesn't do anything because it's looking just for overbought, oversold conditions, extreme conditions along those lines. So rather than be uninvested, I just use it in my EGM account. When a trade shows up, I just do the trade using some margin. Trades only last a short period of time, these type of trades.
Right. Okay, we'll get back to some more details about that short-term approach. But let me ask you the last question about your own investing. How much time then you have to spend to manage your account? Because you actually are running a multiple different strategies. So does it require you to spend hours every day, or it's maybe somehow automated? How it looks?
It's all pretty much automated. Bitcoin, I don't have to do anything. The fixed income and EGM models, once a month, I do my rebalancing. So I just follow what the model tells me to do. The shorter term momentum strategy, the BEST model, it trades once a week. So on the weekend, it tells me what my position should be on Monday morning. And then on the snapback or overbought, oversold short term trades, I get a signal after the markets close that I need to do a trade the next day around the open. So I really don't have to do much other than check the computer after the markets close each day and put in an order if I need to. And then once a week on the weekend or once a month at the end of the month, I follow the other models.
Okay. Before we go into the details of today's discussion, could you please explain the momentum anomaly on which you were working for years, like you mentioned, from 2011? What it is, why it works, and why it's interesting?
Well, momentum is persistence in performance. So it means that something that has been doing well should continue to do well, and vice versa, as long as you're dealing in the proper time frame. So momentum typically works using lookbacks of 1 to 12 months. Especially 3 to 12 months when you're dealing with stocks and bonds. And the reason it works is because of behavioral anomalies, and that's what makes it interesting to me anyway. And what you have initially is people don't react to information coming into the marketplace all at once. There's some inertia there, what's called anchoring. There's also the disposition effect, where people tend to sell their winners too soon and hold on to their losers too long. So all of this creates a headwind that keeps assets from reaching their what you might call true value right away. But eventually, they do reach their true value. And then you have herding taking over, where the markets can become overextended. That's what you might call the second stage of momentum, where markets tend to overreach. And then you have sometimes an overbought or oversold condition. And because I wanted to also deal with that, that's how and why I came up with the approach we're going to talk about more today.
Yeah. And in the description I got from you about that latest program, I see the quote by Humphrey Neal from the book The Art of Contrary Thinking. And the quote starts with the words, "When everybody thinks alike, everyone is likely to be wrong." But that seems like how momentum seems to be created. So it sounds quite, you know, counterintuitive. So that one thing doesn't work in one context, but it works in the other. Could you please explain?
Well, Neil's quote applies to the second stage of momentum, where markets tend to overreact, where everybody's getting on board. You have herding, you have bubbles and blow-offs, but it doesn't apply to the first part. In the first part, actually, the opposite is going on, where people are ignoring the information and nobody's thinking alike, or very few.
Okay. So let's talk a bit more about your latest work, because it's a totally different investing idea to momentum, or it seems to be a different concept. Why did you become interested in something which seems to be quite the opposite of momentum?
Well, as I mentioned, I've always had a contrary streak. I've always thought, well, let's look at niches that are underexploited. So back in the 1990s, I started looking at these short-term mean reverting type trades, and I was successful with it. I found that there was validity to it, but you have to be careful what markets you're doing it in. It doesn't work so well in commodity markets because you can have serious supply shocks that can cause the markets to just keep going. So, and then with individual stocks, you've got some problems too, because you could have surprises there, you know, earning surprises or mergers, acquisitions, or failed mergers right. and acquisitions. So there's a lot of idiosyncratic risk. So I found that ETFs were really the best vehicle for this type of trading. But in the 90s, there weren't very many of them. So I didn't go very far with it. It was just about 3 years ago that occurred to me I ought to take another look, because now there's about 2,000 ETFs. So there should be ample opportunities. And I went and researched it, and indeed I found that it worked very well.
How you classify the short-term approach we are talking about now? It's not mean reversion per se, at least to my understanding, but it's a kind of counter trend on the other hand. Am I correct? Could you please explain?
Yes, it uses mean reversion type energy, but it doesn't hold on until you reach the mean. It's basically just looking for short-term overextensions to the market, and then it goes the other way. So this happens quite frequently. Different ETFs will become extremely overbought or oversold, and then there's a snapback more towards their fair value. Because when they go to extreme, people who usually would take the other side of trade to keep the market in balance, they tend to just sit on their hands until the short-term momentum wanes, and then they jump on. So that's where we want to be. We want to be on the snapback part of that trade.
And by the way, do you think that investing, the value investing, is a form of mean reversion or even maybe counter trend? Because, for example, Warren Buffett said once that be fearful when others are greedy and greedy when others are fearful. So does it mean that value investing is also a kind of a form of mean reversion?
Usually that's true, and the academic research supports that. They found that mean reversion operates on a daily or basis, you know, a time frame of a week or less. And they also found that it exists on a 3 to 5 year time horizon. So that's the domain of so-called value investing.
And by the way, so what's your opinion on value investing and also very popular dividend investing? There's a lot of people following that approach.
I don't have a very high opinion of either one, actually. I wrote a blog post some years ago called Factor Zoo or Unicorn Ranch, where I presented evidence showing that value investing, when you look at it carefully, the evidence really wasn't there to support it. And most people, you know, ignored what I had to say. Now they're not ignoring it so much now that value stocks have really tanked. But you can look at it just logically. You know, everybody likes the idea of bargains. You know, you go to a store and you buy something cheap. Well, the reason why is because they either have excess inventory or they want to bring you in to the place to sell you something else. Well, Mr. Market doesn't care about either of those. And if something appears cheap, there's usually a reason for it. And the same goes for dividend investing, which is similar to value investing. I had a good friend some years ago, smart person, and he said to me one time, you know, I don't care so much about what stocks do in the short run. I just want to invest my money and collect the dividends. And I know over time, you know, stocks go up. So I cautioned him against that. I said, well, you should look at total return, not just dividends. And in fact, from an economic point of view, you might be better off not investing in dividend stocks because dividends are taxed at a higher rate than capital gains. But he didn't listen to me. And he put most of his money into Tyco Labs, WorldCom, Citicorp, Washington Mutual, and his biggest investment was Enron. Right. Now, all of those companies except Citicorp went out of business.
Right. Okay. Would you agree that good strategies are emotionally difficult, and that's why, paradoxically, this is why they still work? So in other words, as I once heard Cliff Asness saying that poor Sharpe ratio is our good friend, because that means that such strategy is tough to follow, and probably this is why it may work. Would you agree with such statement?
Yes, investing should be simple, but that doesn't mean it's easy. It can be very difficult to deal with one's emotions. You have what's called FOMO, fear of missing out, which causes people to be greedy. And then you have FUD, or fear, uncertainty, and doubt, which causes them to think something's going to go to zero. It's gone down. So that's why I like a systematic approach. You just have to follow the system, which is sometimes not easy to do. But
discipline is a problem.
Yes, it is a problem. Whether you do it with discretion or whether you have a system, many people will abandon the system or make modifications based on short-term considerations, and usually that's to their detriment.
Is there room for a discretionary approach in your portfolio?
There can be on the short-term overreaction type modeling. I don't do it that way myself, but you can add a little more value to it if you want to do that. Let me explain that in more detail. I get a signal to, say, sell short tomorrow on the open. So I'll go in and do it. I'll just put in a market order on the open in my own account because I want my account to be in accordance with the track record that I've built up for back testing and real-time trading. I want it to continue the same way. But you could do a little better if you see what happens when the market opens, and then you want to use a little discretion there. So if you're going to sell short and the market is still going up 5 minutes after it opens, you might wait a half hour, an hour, before you put on the trade. And conversely, if the market has started to retrace already, you'll want to do the trade right away.
If you had to choose between, let's say, momentum and counter trend or some other strategies you're using, and you would have to choose only one, what would it be and why?
Well, thankfully, I don't have to choose only one. But if I did, I would choose momentum, because there are a lot of different ways to use momentum. And as I mentioned earlier, I have a number of different momentum models. I have one for fixed income. I have a global balance momentum, which is more conservative, looking at more different or different kinds of assets. And then I have a enhanced global equities momentum. And I have my new model, which looks at all the ETFs and is shorter term in nature and looks at multiple different ways of looking at momentum. So by combining these different momentum models together, I can come up with a portfolio that suits my risk profile very well. And I think other people could do the same.
Okay, let's talk now about your latest program. You call it a snapback trading. So maybe let's start from the beginning. How did you come up with this model and why you call it snapback?
Well, I came up with it because I knew it worked. This approach works based on the work I did in the early 90s. And I wanted something that would be different from momentum. There are really two forces in the market. One is autocorrelation or persistence or momentum. And the other is the opposite, which is mean reversion or identifying overbought, oversold conditions. And they trade in very different time frames. Momentum is an intermediate term approach, and snapback is a short term one. I call it snapback because that's what we're looking for. We're not looking for a long period of time for these trades to work.
And is snapback then negatively correlated to approach like global equities momentum, for example?
It can be, and that's one of the advantages of it, because let's say the market's really strong and we're in long in our momentum models. Well, the snapback trades will actually look for short-term retracements when the markets get ahead of itself. So it can serve as a hedge type approach to momentum. Not always that way, because sometimes it's going in the same direction, but it's nice when that does happen. It does give you some diversification value.
So what are the main advantages and disadvantages of snapback model?
Well, the main advantage is that it's doing something different. And not many people trade this way. So, you know, if you look out there, you're not going to find investment advisors offering this kind of approach. At least I haven't seen any. And as I mentioned, it does give you some good diversification. The drawback is it can be psychologically challenging when, you know, everybody's wanting to buy, you're out there, you know, selling or selling short. Or when the markets get clobbered and people are wanting to run to the exit, that's when you step up and put in your buy order.
And what kind of real-time results have you had? And especially if you compare it to your momentum model, like global equities momentum, is there a big difference between these two approaches in terms of the results?
Well, what's nice about this is you can control the results that you get depending on how aggressive you want to be. I do it conservatively. I might invest 20% of the account in a trade or a number of different positions in any one particular day. That's about the average that I'll invest. Now, if we have two or three consecutive days, you know, that'll add up. But I'd say 80% of our trades are just one-day trades, and another 10% are, you know, we have 2 days of these type of trades in a row. Now, the results have been about 70 to 75% winning trades, with wins being greater than losses. The average amount per trade is about 1.7%. And there's about one trade a week on average, but we can go several weeks without any trades. And other times we might have three or four trades in a day. And then we split up our capital allocation among those. And then we might have two or three or occasionally even 4 days, consecutive days in which we put on trades.
So the good thing I see already from Snapback is that from the investor's point of view, you can get almost instant gratification for what you're doing, because with the momentum, sometimes you have to wait even years to be rewarded, let's say. Whereas here, this winning percentage is very high, which is also good from the, let's say, behavioral point of view, because it's maybe helping to follow the strategy. Although, as you said, it's not easy. Could you please then explain in some more details how this approach works? Is it the counter trend approach as such? And if you could maybe share with us some more details how this strategy works.
Yes, I'm basically using multiple ways of looking at overbought, oversold, and I look for a confluence when I get several of these indicators coming together. You know, then I take a position, and it's really when different ETFs become short-term overbought or oversold, then I'll take a position going the other way, and I'll get out with whatever profit the market has given me. When it's no longer overbought, oversold, I'll get out of the position, and I have a time-based stop as well. I should point out that because I had familiarity with this, after a few months of watching it, I started trading it in my own account. This was in March of 2 years ago. And my real-time performance has corresponded very closely to the backtest performance. And I've opened it up to a few of my private clients, and I've been providing them with signals from last year. It'll be 2 years trading my own account with it, and the results have been consistent throughout this entire time.
Okay. And do you think that the main reason why this approach works is because of the psychological aspects, behavioral biases we have as a human beings, and this is the reason why it works? Because from what you say, it doesn't sound like this approach is just a random set of rules which just appears to work on the past data, but there is something more behind, and the fact that this works again and again seems like there are some errors committed on the way constantly by the people. Am I right?
Yes, you're right. I mean, let's take a trade from a few days ago. We shorted the ARK F. I mean, who's going to want to go and short the ARK funds, you know, except if you're crazy or you have something like what I have. So we got in one day and, you know, got out the other with a small profit, because people psychologically are not inclined to want to do this type of trading.
Okay. You mentioned before that you are trading mostly only ETFs using that model. Because as you said, stocks or commodities, they are not so good. There is some other kind of risk which is not existing on ETFs, which are following broader market. So is it the only reason why you're using ETFs is just because it gives better results, or there is some other reason for that, like, I don't know, liquidity or spreads or whatever, I don't know?
I like the fact that you've got a lot of stocks in each of these ETFs. It gets rid of most of the idiosyncratic risk. I only use ones that have good trading volume, so liquidity is not an issue. I've got a stable of about 65 ETFs that I'll track and that I'll do trades in. Not every ETF is suitable for it. As I mentioned before, I won't do commodity-type ETFs. There are some where the volatility is just too high. As an example, this approach identified has been really good at identifying overbought, oversold conditions in Bitcoin, but I won't trade it that way because Bitcoin is just too wild in its fluctuation. So knowing when to get out of the trade is problematic with the volatility is too high. I prefer ETFs that are more well-behaved, that have shown that they behave consistently in terms of how they react to overbought, oversold conditions. And that's what my backtesting can indicate.
The only problem I can see with ETFs is that the history of ETFs is short. I mean, in terms of data, because it's a kind of a data-hungry, let's say, industry when you want to backtest your ideas. So how do you create your model to be sure that it's not a curve fit? Because, you know, the data is quite limited here.
Well, the first thing is to understand that the concept works. You have 1988, Bruce Lehman did his research showing sizable return reversals from 1 week to the next in stocks. And I think it works better in ETFs. That was back in 1988. I take every ETF back to its beginning with my back testing. And, you know, we have some that go back quite a bit. And I can see the consistency throughout time. There's really been no change in how well that it works.
So how many ETFs in your trade universe currently, and how do you select them? I mean, as you mentioned, there are 2,000 ETFs, I mean, just in the United States. But I understand, first of all, that you're limiting only to the ETFs listed on American stock exchanges, right?
Yes.
So how you apply the filter on top of the 2,000 ETFs so that you come up with your own universe, which you are using to do the trading?
Well, one of the main things is liquidity. I want to make sure that there's a lot of participation in the ETF. I like to see public participation because public is the one that gets involved in these behavioral type anomalies. Although I found plenty of investment advisors getting caught up in it too. And then just like to see that through its history, that it's shown that it's responsive to this type of trading. So I'll go back through to the beginning of each ETF, and I'll make sure that there's some consistency there, that it's just not a couple of trades that make it look good. And I use price charts for doing that. You know, not just the numbers. I'll look through and see, well, does this look like a sensible setup? I'll go back through the entire history of each ETF. That's why I'm limited to right now to about 65 of them. I expect I'll add a few more over time as I continue looking at the possible ones available.
Okay. So typically, how many trades you have per month? I think you already mentioned. I just don't recall. Because this is like you said that sometimes for weeks it may happen that this model doesn't generate any signal. So basically there are moments when this model, let's say, is not present on the market, you're out of the market. So on average per month, how many trades you make?
Well, I like to look at it in terms of trading days because sometimes on a day I'll get two or three ETFs that I put a trade in,
right,
and then I split the capital amongst them, which I like to do because there's some diversification there. So typically there might be 4 to 5 trading days per month, and that can vary quite a bit. Some months might have 10 or 12, and others might only have one or two.
Right. Okay. And is there any market environment in which Snapback works? I mean, it's the best moment to use Snapback. because as every model, it's not working at all times. So is there any specific environment which is especially, let's say, friendly for that kind of trading?
It seems to work under pretty much all market environments from what I've seen, going back as far as I can. I'd say orderly type markets that just have short-term aberrations are the best ones. You don't want markets that are too abnormal in terms of their market activity. But even there, you know, it will just tend to back away and not do anything types like that.
All right. And you mentioned already about the high winning percentage and also about the returns. But you haven't mentioned about drawdowns. How severe drawdowns can be with that kind of trading, investing?
Well, again, that depends on how much you invest. I tend to do investing conservatively, using this as an overlay. You could have it as a dedicated strategy now that there are enough ETFs and enough trades going on. But the maximum drawdown, average maximum drawdown for ETF is a little under 5%. That's if you were 100% invested in that ETF. And I typically invest about 20% in an ETF.
Okay. So, for example, if, let's say, I'm using some momentum strategy, which is already fully invested, do you think that using snapback model is good to be used with on the margin account, so that normally my account is fully invested, but if there is an occasion when the snapback model is generating a signal, then to use the margin account? Do you think that it's a good combination?
That's what we do now. I think it works out really well that way, because you're not just sitting on assets idly when snapback isn't doing anything. And
right.
We're only in trades for generally 1 or 2 days. Average holding period's about 2 days. So it's a good way to do it. And it gives an incremental return to the momentum-based accounts, which is attractive. And so far, we haven't had any kind of significant drawdowns doing it in 2 years.
So it sounds like snapback is a good addition, or maybe not extension, but addition, which improves the, for example, dual momentum approach, which is in nature, let's say, long term. And just if you use snapback model overall, the result, the return on the account is improved.
Yes, that's the idea. What can we find that gives some diversification value, a different approach that will boost our return and not increase our risk exposure very much, or even decrease it?
And by the way, have you tried that on cryptocurrencies?
Yes, I've tried it on Bitcoin, and the exits are great, but the tricky part is knowing when to get back in. So I don't use it myself that way, but I have a couple of private clients I give the information to who are Bitcoin traders, and what they do with it, I'm not sure, but they do value the information.
Okay. And if I understood you correctly, you are also opening short positions, right?
Yes, quite a few of them.
Okay. So you, it may happen, for example, that at the same time you are having long position, let's say on S&P 500 following momentum, and at this very same time you have S&P 500 short using following the snapback.
Yes, S&P is not, well, we trade IVV with snapback, but it could happen. More likely it won't be the S&P, it'll be something else that we're short.
Okay. If anyone is interested in counter trend investing style or in that particular strategy, snapback strategy, what should they do? I mean, where to find the information? Because I understand that the model we were discussing now, this is proprietary model, it's not open, right? So if someone would be interested in that, where to find some more information?
I have an information sheet on that goes into more detail. They can email me and get that. Right now, I'm including it in the licensing arrangements I have with some private clients who get my model signals. And I'm hoping to find an investment advisor who will manage accounts with this, and working on that right now. But expect I'll have something lined up along those lines before too long.
Do you think that it would be possible to build ETF on top of that strategy? I know that would be using other ETFs, but just to have a simple way to follow that strategy. So just to buy such ETF, which would just mimic the same logic which is behind Snapback. Would that make sense? Or it's not that good idea as would be, for example, with the GEM model?
It could make sense, particularly from a tax point of view, because these are all short-term gains we have with Snapback.
So maybe it would be great to have a single ETF which would implement GEM and also Snapback at the same time. So exactly the way you're doing, and just pack all this into a single ETF. That sounds like a good idea, at least to me.
Sounds like a good one to me too.
Right, okay. And do you think that something can really be done here? I mean, did you make any efforts to create such ETF?
I'm a researcher, so I'm not, you know, and I'm getting on in years, so I'm not really in a position to go and do something like that myself. But the door is open. I'm always willing to work with someone who's interested in what I'm doing.
Okay, so if everyone is listening up, who has the ability to open the ETF, let's contact Gary. And by the way, Gary, because you were mentioning about the ETFs which are listed on in United States, but for example, some investors like me in Europe, okay, I have access to American ETFs, but most of the investors in Europe, they don't have access to American ETFs. So do you think that your approach would also work as well on European ETFs?
It should. The issue there might be liquidity. I understand a lot of the European ones have limited liquidity. I'd also like to point out that this type of trading would be ideal for a hedge fund, too. So if there are any hedge funds out there looking for another strategy, they can contact me as well.
Okay. So I think that we are reaching to the end, but I have some last question, let's say, from different area than short-term trading. What do you think about passive investing? I mean, here, like permanent portfolios, like 60-40 or whatever, some very basic ideas where we don't try to beat the market. We just buy the whole market with a different ratio of stocks and bonds on in it. But we just buy it and we hold it and we don't care what is happening. And the history shows that in the very long term, like 100 years, the stock market, after inflation, the real return is around 5%. Of course, with a huge drawdowns in between, so it's not a free dinner. What's your opinion about the passive investing as such?
I think it's a great approach if you can do it. The problem is the drawdowns, as you mentioned. So if you're well diversified, you have something like a permanent portfolio, it can work out well. But if you're not, you know, it could be problematic. For example, I know a lot of people who bought Apple stock, and they intend to be buy and hold investors. And they say, well, look how much money I would have made if I had bought Apple when it first came out and held it until now. Well, I don't know anyone who bought it early and held till now, because when stocks go through 60% or more drawdowns, people tend to not want to keep holding some.
All right. Okay, thank you, Gary, for that. Is there anything else you would like to add before we will finish today's discussion, today's podcast?
No, feel free to, as I said, contact me for more information about Snapback or any of my other proprietary models.
Right. So thank you, Gary, very much for your time. It was very great to have you here again. And I wish you the best of luck. And hopefully, let's talk again in the near future.
Thank you very much, Lucy.
Thank you. Bye.
Bye.
Introducing WonderSuite from Bluehost.com, the tool that makes WordPress wonderful for everyone. Website creation is hard, but now with Bluehost, you can answer a few simple questions about your business and goals, and the WonderSuite tools will automatically lay out your WordPress website or store in minutes. Seriously. From there, you can customize your design, pick your brand colors, and add blocks. No custom theme or coding required. You'll get content suggestions that you can keep or revise. And with Yoast SEO built in, we automatically help you get found in search engines. From step-by-step guidance to suggested plugins to an AI-powered help bot, our built-in tools make WordPress wonderful for everyone. Whether you're a beginner or a pro, you can join over 2 million Bluehost users. Go to bluehost.com/wondersuite. That's bluehost.com/wondersuite.